Okay. What I'll be doing over the course of 6 weeks. 5 weeks? 5 or 6.
Five.
We'll do as much as one more as we can. What I really want to do is I wanted to, some people have been in this year before, so you know that I talked about why we have Mount Fuji. We talked about the failed things, but I thought we talked maybe about one of the successful things. Dubbin is simply too large to do. Well, Dubbin is the greatest of things. He's too much to do on in one time. So I thought Shlomo would be a really interesting example, because I think Shlomo is actually less known. The story of Shlomo is less known than could be. What I would suggest, by the way, of course, for the Shia, for those familiar with it, the Tanakh is pretty important. I think today, if I'm not mistaken, there's some teaching back. If I am not mistaken, I think Molochim Aleph and Bet is what we're going to cover, and I believe that's in Chapter Hayesara. I think Chapter Hayesara. Is that right? What's that? Right, correct. And that's what we'll be doing. So if you want to look inside and you don't have a Tanakh, then in the art scroll for Mashiach, you can find the story. I think you'll probably enjoy the shiur better if you have the technique. If you don't, but of course, I don't get the bridge at the end, so you can do it. So essentially what we're covering, Shlomo's life goes from Malachim Aleph, Perek Aleph, to Malachim Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. That's essentially, Shlomo gets 11 chapters.
Page 1133.
Shlomo gets 11 chapters, that's all he gets. He manages to do a lot of interesting things. And we will cover those basic interesting things. We're going to cover, he reintroduces essentially politics, theocracy, all kinds of economics, reinvents economics on the entire Middle Eastern front for his time. So we'll get into all those kind of interesting things. We're going to criticize Shlomo a little bit because Chazal did and the Navi does, and we need to understand what Shlomo did wrong in order for us not to make the mistake again. That's more or less why Navi is always written, so that we can learn from the mistakes of our, even our betters. What I'd like to start with first, though, is not Shlomo's life, so to speak, but the story, the first two chapters really involve how Shlomo rose to power, that is, how Shlomo got involved, because it's not as obvious as he died. One would think, okay, David died, David getting old, he died, there was a little conflict over the king, but it's a no-brainer, Shlomo should be king, and thank goodness everything worked out beautifully. But it's a lot more complicated than that, so that's essentially what I'd like to do. So instead of talking today about Shlomo's life, I'm going to talk about Shlomo's introduction into kingship, because that's a very important, plays an important factor, essentially, for the rest of Shlomo's kingship. So the title of this week's year is Three-Step Program for a Successful Succession, which will be the first two chapters. And then next week, when we get afterwards, we'll go on to touch on this interesting life, like this coming to me in Athens. It's very strange. The pasuk opens up on that one. David's, I think, Bab Yamin. The king David was old, very old. They chasu Bab Yamin. They covered up the cloth. The lodi chamlo. You can't get warm. So I'm sure you've heard the story. They go and they try to cut the clothes on him. They try to get a woman to warm him up, and it doesn't really work. And then things sort of skitter out of control afterwards. However, what's interesting, there are two things which I think should. First thing you need to do is, there are a lot of strange stories. That is, the Shunat Meat story is really out of place. If you think of it, not because this book of Malachim is not about David's life. David's life is Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Bet. the Book of Malachim is about what happens. Again, we talked about this with Rose and Mashiach. A Melech's not a Melech until he has a child who is a Melech. And if that happens, you establish dynasty. So that's why Sefer Malachim is Sefer Malachim, because until David had a child, he wasn't locked in, and anything could happen. If David messed up, had a family of Shaul, which he didn't. The Shaul wasn't the great king, but if David wasn't the great king, he was. And there are really no guarantees in life, ever. That's not what Malachim is about. Malachim is about once the kingdom has been established, the country unified, it's time to talk about the kings. The first two chapters talk about what obviously happened, the succession for the king. The first time you have a child that wants to be the king, you have to fight for succession. So it's built into the idea of multiple brothers and multiple sons of the king. So the first two chapters are specifically about the ascent, the battle, the ascent of the throne. The two main characters are Shlomo and Melech. Shlomo prince. And Adoniyahu. In fact, if you notice, I quoted two psukim, which are later on in the chapter, which are very clearly define the fact that we're talking about one thing, which is whoever it is must win the succession and must establish his personal rule. That is, before I go and start putting together a kingdom, before I start putting together economics and politics and Beit HaMikdash, etc., I've got to establish I'm a king. It's got to be done. So if you notice in the last, the Pasuk Yud-Bet of Malchum Aleph, says the Shlomo Yashav al Yisei David Adi, but Tikon Malchuto Me'od, which means that the Nagashai tells us, he solidified his kingship very much, which tells you that everything up to that point, which is all of Perek Aleph and half of Perek Bet, is about the succession, who's going to be the king, and now that he did, he do a good job at setting himself up as king. And then by the end of Perek Bet, by Mem Vav, you have the same thing, Mahamamachan Nechona B'yad Shlomo. We'll see why it requires two, but nonetheless, chapter 1 and chapter 2, by their ending definitions, are clearly defined as a succession. So if you look at the stories that happen in chapter 1, they honestly seem out of place. The Shunamit story seems totally wacko. Now maybe you'd say, okay, what's the purpose of the Shunamit as far as succession? If it's not succession, then maybe the best you could do is say, well, maybe the Navi wants to throw in an isolation story so we can fall asleep for the rest of the story. You know, it goes on four chapters about building the Beit HaMikdash. It's a little bit of a snore, although I'm going to try to make it a little more interesting than it typically is. It's actually very interesting stuff with Beit HaMikdash, and we'll get there. But it's a little bit of a snoozer. Maybe people will skip through the chapter. So let's put in a little bit of dirty stuff in the beginning and get people excited. If we want to be a little less humorous, we could say that what they were trying to do, the Avadim, what they were trying to do by warming him up, and then by getting the girl to warm him up, was to do what? In fact, what's that? To have more kids. Well, he had enough kids, I think, to set up, although I think you're definitely on the right track, which is what they wanted to do what? Involve him more in the succession, very possible, or possibly to delay the inevitable. That's also a possibility. But that doesn't make so much sense, because again, if it was to delay the inevitable, it would have been a Shmuel. If it would have been to involve David a little bit more in the succession, that's exactly what the only thing could be. We want David awakened more, so he can start doing what he's supposed to do, which is deciding which son. But what's interesting is everything, yes?
After you had so many wives, you don't forget so many wives, so woman, you're telling us there's no way
correct. Absolutely right. And now, let me try to explain the method of compounding the issue. You're right, where are all the wives? Where's Bathsheba, for instance? Where is she? So she's first. The second thing is a very strange method, which you may know of. And this people have you before, a method that's never meant to shot, but is what's going on behind the scenes. So if you flip over to page 2. Sorry, I didn't print out the method, but I'm sure most of you know it. The story is based on what happened in Shmuel Bet. Hold on. Oh, you know what? Before we do the strange method, I want to first shatter some misconceptions. Who's supposed to be the king? Like, who's supposed to win the World Series? Well, Yankee fans. Unless you're Met fans, then why not? You might as well move to New York. So there's no question that the Yankees are supposed to win. If you woke someone up in the morning, the question is, who is justified? Who has the justification to be the king? We've got a battle between Shlomo and Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu, I'm not even sure most people can place. Most of us would say that there's no question Shlomo should be the king. Seems like a no-brainer. We know Shlomo. We know what happened. We kind of read the last page of the book, so we know exactly what's supposed to happen. So the question is, why, you know, what's the argument? Why does Shlomo just say, I'm supposed to be? What, that is, go ahead. Exactly right. In fact, if we look at the simple shot, that's exactly what I quoted here on the second page, Shmuel Ben Perek Gimel. Vayivaldu David Banim, David had sons, Bechavron, which means before he got to Yerushalayim, before he met Bathsheba. Vayi Bechorov, his oldest son was Amnon. Vachinom Al Yisrael, that was Achinom. And the Shneu, the second oldest one, Pasuk Yimol, was Kilav, who was a child of the wife of Nabal HaKanali, which is a separate story. Hashlishi Avshalom, ben Macha, Batalmi Melch Shur, the famous Avshalom. Varavi'i Adoniyahu ben Chagid. So Adoniyahu was in fact the fourth son. But, as we all know, what happened to Amnon? You guys know what happened to Amnon? What? That's right, Tamar happened to Amnon, and who killed Amnon dead? Tamar's brother, who was Avshalom, killed Amnon dead. No more firstborn. The secondborn Kilav disappears completely. We never hear from him again. Now, Chazal say that Kilav later became Daniel. Again, there's a very, when we learn, if we ever get around to learning Sefer Daniel, we'll talk about why they make the Medrash. But obviously, Kilav simply disappears. They also, there's a very, another more pertinent Medrash, which says Kilav, why was he called Kilav? Because he was like his father. Why? Because it was a chashash that he might have belonged actually to Nabal HaKarmeli. And therefore, you have to, Hashem made him look like David to make sure that they knew he was David. But that very Medrash tells you that his birthright was questionable from the start. That's what the Medrash is supposed to say. Ah, okay, so we knew, yeah. The bottom line is, what happened to Kilav? The simple shot answer is, he disappears. I don't know what happens to him. I had a student, although I can't find the Medrash. The student told me that he read a Medrash that he was bitten by a snake and died. I didn't see that Medrash. I looked for it, didn't see that Medrash. The bottom line is, Kilav disappears from the picture. So let's just assume that either he was, I don't know, something, who knows? If the Navi ignores him, then obviously he's not pertinent to the story. The third one is Absalom. Now we know what happened to Absalom. Absalom, in fact, did become the king for a short period of time, not the best of circumstances, and he got killed by Yoav. So that's three kids now, which means who's the next oldest child? Adoniyahu. So if you take a look at the Rambam, the quote the Rambam, you skip down one, Hilchot Malachim, it's the third chapter down. Hilchot Malachim, Malachim will come on Paragal. I'll read you something wild. Miniach ben Katan, when you leave a young son, Mishamimu Anuch Mahamucha Ashi Gadel. So you set up an apotropos, you set up authority until he gets older. Moshasu Yehoyadal Yehosh. Fine. The Chol HaKodem and Nachalai, anybody who comes first as far as property, Kodem LiYerusha HaMelucha is first to the inheritance of the kingship. V'Haben HaGadol, and the oldest son, Kodem LeKatamim. That's a halacha. Fair halacha b'Ran and Rama. So now if somebody wakes you up and says, okay, Shlomo or Adoniyahu, the answer is, halachically, it's Adoniyahu. So now all of a sudden our world is topsy-turvy. Things aren't so clear as they used to be. And Adoniyahu is not some apparently not some thug who just wants to, out of nowhere, take things away from Shlomo. In fact, let me reverse the question. Why do you think, what leads you to believe that Shlomo should have anything to do with the kingship? Not only is he not the firstborn son of Hebron, he's down the line. If you take a look in Shmuel, the second chapter, he's down the line of the Yerushalayim kids. We got, let's see, what do we got there? We got in Yigdal, we got Shavua, Shobab, Natan, and Shlomo. He's the fourth in line. What about Shavua, Shobab? So maybe you could say, oh, Yerushalayim boys were holier. You know, maybe you could go with that, although it doesn't agree with the Rama. But he's still the fourth in line. What about the other three? Don't tell me that they all disappeared. So now I have a question for you. Then why is it that we all think that Shlomo deserves to be king? Anybody? Somebody must feel strongly about it. Why should Shlomo be king? Right, that's what everyone says. And it's true, however, it's not written. I won't tell you why it's true until later. I'll prove it later. If you simply read Shmuel Bet Perek Yudet, take a look at the very last item on the page. Vayinachem David the Bathsheba Ishto, this is after the first child died, which is the one that was born out of sin between Bathsheba and David, so he's dead. Vayavo Eleha, he comes to her by Yishkatma, he takes her in. By the way, look at those words. I'm going to get back to them. These are very loving words, and I'll tell you why I'm thinking that later, but not now. Vatele ben vatikra et shmo Shlomo, she calls his name Shlomo, vadonai ahevo, and God loves him, vayishlach biyad natana navi, he sent it to Na'avi, vayikra et shmo Yudidya, they call his name Yudidya, ba'avur Hashem, because of God. Anywhere in that passage, you can say that Shlomo, the Pharisee, is supposed to be the king. I have a sense of something special, but nowhere does nothing come over and say, hey, I'm supposed to be the king, this guy's supposed to be the king. Nothing simply never utters those words. Now, the other reason why people think that is because Divrei HaYamim, those words are uttered. However, most people misunderstand when they were uttered. If you take a look at the pasuk on the second to last paragraph, Divrei HaYamim, it says, Vayihi alai, this is David speaking. Vayihi alai, Dvar Hashem, Lemor, Dam, Rosh, Shafakta. This is when God says you can't build the Beit HaMikdash. מלחמות גדולות, עשית לא תבנה בית, שמי אנחנו build a house my name, כי דמים רבים שפכת ארצה. Because you spilled a lot of blood. By the way, we're going to see the person that Shlomo does when he becomes the king of what? He's going to spill a lot of blood. So even this is very young. It's not so simple, but that's for another year. Hine ben nolad v'cha, here, behold, a son will be born to you. Hu yiyet ish menucha, he will be a man of, I would rather say, the Messiah, as opposed to a man of rest. Well, let's leave that alone. V'amichot yilo mikol arivav, and I will relieve him from all his enemies. Ki shlomo yiyet shmo. Right? So there you have the Beirish. He asked for the Beit HaMikdash, which was before Shlomo's birth. It's right when he got to Yerushalayim, or soon after he got Yerushalayim. The only problem is this speech is made after Shlomo's already become king. This speech, if you look at it in context, first of all, the first thing is you have to understand the Kibbutz Yomi, which was put together by Ezra and Zanshe Knesset Gedol. So you can't, the word, you can't, Tuvim simply cannot be read like Nevi'im. If something shows up in Tuvim, and literally does not show up in Nevi'im, you have to take it with a grain of salt. You have to understand what Ezra was trying to say about it. But the other thing is the speech, even if Ezra does mean it literally, and very possibly he does, and we'll find out if he does, we'll find out Ezra's right. Nonetheless, this speech is made by David after Shlomo has been coronated. And I'll prove that later on, if I get to it. Which means at the time, David said nothing that we know of. Natan said nothing that we know. So now we've got a guy who has no, we have no formal proof that Shlomo is supposed to be king. We have Adonio with formal proof that he's supposed to be king. We got problems, honestly. Our whole world is topsy-turvy. So, with that in mind, that things aren't as simple as it seems, because I like the complicated things, what's the point of the strange measures? The measure starts off, so now let me try to answer both questions. One is, why Shlomo, as opposed to Adoniyahu? What was so bad about Adoniyahu? Question number two, especially since he halachically deserves to be king, question number two is, what's the whole story of the Shulamit? It's really strange, it's really out of place. So there's a very strange medrash, which is the reason why your clothes don't make him warm. I don't know if you know the medrash. It's because when Shaul was chasing after David, David found him asleep. He ripped his cloak. His soldiers told him to rip his cloak. If you want to look inside, it's quoted there. It's not quoted. I can tell you outside. And immediately David feels bad about it. By Yachala Libo, he feels really gross about it. He knows that he's done something wrong. He knows he's jumped the gun. So the medrash says because he ripped the cloak, that's why he wouldn't be able to save from death. Essentially, that's why he could not be warned. Pretty rough punishment, no? David ripped Shaul's cloak to indicate
the knife.
What's that?
Cut it with the knife.
Cut it with a knife, okay. That was the second story. There were two stories that he caught Shaul blind. The first story is he just cut with a knife because his people told him so. The next time he found him sleeping in a cave, and then his soldiers told him, you should kill Shaul right now. He doesn't. He says, "Chas v'shalom, I won't do it." So he stole his the thing that was under his head and his staff, and then he yelled at Abner for daring to not be a good bodyguard. But at that second point, it wasn't really Shaul. The first time, he was a little confused. He felt like I'm being chased. There was a sense that David has done the wrong thing. I suppose that second time, when David is simply trying to make a symbolic statement, here David comes close to killing Shaul. In fact, his people are telling him, kill Shaul. They don't just mean rip his cloak. They mean rip Shaul. David rips a cloak and then he backs off from what he's doing. But the question is it so bad what David's doing? I mean, the Din Rodeh certainly applies. If you take a look at the first passage, the first thing. But he got Shaul shlosh talmi mishpachor, 3,000 people, they're trying to kill David. So anybody who's trying to kill you, there's a Din Rodeh there. There is a Din Rodeh. Okay, he's throwing the melon. But it's not so, so the question that you have to ask yourself is, was it so bad or was it not? Okay, he's not supposed to kill Shach Hashem. Obviously, it's bad enough for David to feel bad about it. We trust David's word when it says, Vayachalav Libo. So obviously, it did something bad. Yet it's hard for us to rationalize how bad it really was. So how bad, how guilty does David feel? Now with that as a backup, let's get to the Shunamid. You would say, the Shunamid, I have a question for you. The Avadim are trying to do what? They're trying to do what to David? They're trying to warm them up, maybe so it could have something to do with the succession process. Except when we analyze the Pesukim, we'll see the exact opposite is the truth. In fact, let's take a look in Malachim and let's read the words. Vayomer lo Avadav, he said to his servants, his servant said to David, Ladoni HaMelech, Yivakshu Ladoni HaMelech Narab Tula. Let's find a nice young virgin girl. Va'omdalef me HaMelech, which the most unfortunate say she should serve you, literally be your servant. Vatehilo the Sochenet, which Rashi quotes the Yonatan to say, she should simply warm you up. It's not a sexual connotation. It is simply, I don't know, she rubs your back and just keeps you nice and close. What? Physical therapist, excellent, very nice, very nice. That's much better than I can tell. Thank you. The Shachba v'chekela, okay, that is unambiguous, which is to sleep with you. But I'm live with the Amelim. And the goal is, of course, to warn the king. Now they find that Naraya father the whole Gusha, they look all placed by Yimtsu Avishaga Shunanit. They found Avishag from Shunin. Very nice, who cares? I don't care where she's from. Maybe she's from New York City. Who cares? Vayavio Tahalamela. Vanaraya Fa Admao, she is beautiful. She is the babe of babies. But the Hila Melech Sochenet, she does what job? She is her what was that word? What was it used? Her therapist. But Tishar Teyu, she serves it, which she means she covers Vandala from Amela. Vamelech Lo Yidza'a. The Melech refuses to sleep with her. Now there's a simple measure, and I need to explain it because it's a profound measure, but should it be understood shot? Why wouldn't he sleep with her? Because he had 18 wives, and if he were to take the Shunamid, he would have more than one. First of all, the measure said prima facie makes no sense. Why? If you take the face value, because if she wasn't going to be his wife, and the king is allowed many, many quad sheep. So what's the point of the measure? But now let's analyze the Shunamid. What's the purpose of Shunamid? Look at this very descriptive way. The Torah, the Navi, is not wasting words here. The first way that the Shunamit, the description of the Shunamit, is back in Pasuk Tet. And what is it? How is she described? She is a what? She is not Rab Tula. There is only one woman in all of Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, who is described, I should say, really Shmuel Bet, who is described as a Narab Tula. Do you know who that is? Who was a virgin girl, a poor, sorry, torn apart virgin girl in Shmuel Bet? Tamar, exactly right. In fact, let's take a look what happens. Before I get that, now, what's the second description? Second description is where she's from. She's from Shunem, which again, when you read this, normally say, who cares where she's from? So they want to tell you. So let's skip that one. When it actually describes her, they say she's a Yafa Admao. She is beauty of beauty. There is only one woman in all of Shmuel Bet during David's reign who is described as a Yafa Admao. Anybody want to guess who that was? Absolutely. No, Abigail was in the Shmuel Aleph before he took over the kingship. You're right. But in Shmuel Bet, there's only, during the course of David's kingship, there's only one woman, Bathsheba. Now, Shunem. Does anybody know what actually happened in Shunem? Shunem, actually, let me take it. We'll read it inside. Look at Shmuel Aleph, Perikopet. That is the first, second, third, fourth, fifth line down on the B page. David got hot or cold. But he cut two Christine. The Christian got together. Vayavol v'yachanu b'shunem. Vayikvot Shaul v'kol Yisrael. Shaul got all together. V'yachanu b'gulboa. He was on the other side of the valley. Vayar Shaul v'machanei Christian. Vayira v'yecherad v'yibom v'yecherad mo. He was afraid. What would happen in Shunem just a little bit later? He got killed. That was Shaul's last stand. Absolutely right. So now what did he do? Abishai Shunem. The first thing she does, if you want to present something to David, and you say, here's a virgin girl, what do you think is going through David's mind? And the next thing you say is, she says, Fa Ad Ma'od. What does that remind him of? Bathsheba. And he died in Shunem, which is David's ultimate guilt, was the lack of handling things well with Shaul. I'm not going to get into Shmuel Bet, but he seems to be not to learn people's Kesher, because he's terribly upset not only that Shaul has died, but Yonatan's died. His vision of a unified Israel has been destroyed by the fact that he couldn't follow the priest into battle. Separate thing with Shmuel Bet, but David feels always bad. Now the message makes sense. Shaul, David's never quite sure whether what he did or what he didn't do didn't contribute to the Mashiach of Hashem losing his life. So when Shaul bites the dust, in fact, now that Shaul bites the dust, Shaul goes crazy when he goes to a Yidoni, he goes to find, to raise Shmuel, to talk to Shmuel, he essentially gives up. There are two possibilities. The first one is either say that Shmuel's communication with the dead was an insane fantasy altogether. He had gone totally bonkers. Or it was essentially a man who had, it says there, had destroyed all the Yidonim and then immediately turned over all his moral values because he knew this was it. This was his last stand. So here is the Shunamit. Here's the Shunamit. In fact, what then message are the other kings trying to send to David? Kill him is a strong word. It's possible. But in order to explain... What's that? So you're taking a positive view, and that's okay. That's good. This was a more negative view, which undermined your confidence. In fact, let's what?
We can.
See, that's what I would have gone. And now, but then we have to answer the question: what about who are these Avadim? I thought the Avadim were good guys, not bad guys. We'll see that they're not so good. But in, so Tamar was a beautiful, was a nice girl. She was not a sister of Amnon. Nobody should think that Amnon committed incest. It's not right. She came over with Avshalom from Geshur. They were non-Jews. The king was Talmai. He had a son, Avshalom. He had a daughter from a different wife whose name was Tamar. They both came over. Amnon had the hots for Tamar. Could not get his mind off of her. So eventually he rapes her. and destroys her status. In fact, it's an interesting story. I don't want to take too much time. But Tamar was the only one that took up this in Navi, besides Yosef, who wore a Toni Pasim. These are the very interesting level Tamar was. Her life is destroyed. She becomes a living widow in the house. In fact, let's look at, so she begs Amnon, listen, you break me, you destroyed my life. At least take me in as a wife. He locks the door. He says, get rid of this woman. I don't want to even see her. He hates her, the pasuk says, as much as he thought he loved her. It's a very sad story. And because of that, Absalom is so angry that he kills Amnon, and maybe he wanted to kill the rest of the brothers and David as well, although that's up for argument. But here's the scary thing about the Tamar story. Here in Shmuel, Beth, Perek Yud-Gimel, take a look at what happened to Tamar. This is the third paragraph down. Amnon, who is the first in command. Don't forget, Amnon is the oldest kid, which means Amnon is up for rulership. He had to have her. Why? Because she was a virgin. Now look what happens at the end of the story. She is destroyed. She is barren. So she lives in her brother's house. V'hamelech David, look what the Navi, make sure that we know. V'hamelech David shama et kol ha'dvarim elu. So is David aware of the complete story? He's aware of the complete story, and what does he do? V'yichar lo ma'od, is he happy about it? Look at the next pasuk. What does David do? Nothing. Which means he passively sits down, and he doesn't do anything. Now, we can talk about Shmuel Bet for hours and hours, try to figure out why. But the simplest answer is because Amnon was what? Amnon was the next in line. And David was, had a little conundrum. I got my next in line, the king, who's supposed, the prince, who's supposed to be the prince. He's done something bad. Ah, it's not technically a halakha problem. He's obviously upset. David understands the moral implications. It's not incest. So again, there's no halakha. A rapist has to marry the woman. That's the halakha. Right? That's really what's going on. A rapist is forced to marry the woman. Amnon refuses, and where's David in all this? There's a certain passivity among David. So here comes the Shunanit. Shunanit reminds him of passivity. He reminds him of his, and now, what about the mention of the 18 wives? Why is that? Why did he refuse that Bathsheba? Not because he had 18 wives and she was to be the 19th. Because she was reminding him of who they were saying, this woman, she's really beautiful. Who do you think she reminds you of? And he said, no, I refuse to treat her. I refuse. Essentially starting to fight back against the push to put him down. That is, I believe, how this goes. Now, here's the interesting thing about these Avadim. So you're saying, wait a second, Avadim are supposed to be good guys. But a strange thing happens in Shmuel Bet. After Absalom attacks the city, he's on his way, he's going to kill David, he's going to kill everybody in the city. And look at the pasuk here. You have to read this emotionally in order to understand what's going on. It's the last one, Shmuel Bet, that Rav was beginning. So the story, the teller tells David, everybody's supporting Absalom, you are essentially gone. Your history is a kid. He tells to all of his servants in Yerushalayim, come over to Rachel, let's get up and run away. Because none of us will escape. Mipnei Avshalom. Then look at the rest of the pasuk. Maharu lalechet. Penye maher v'hisiguna. Hurry up and go, lest he reach us. V'hiviku aleinu et ara, and we find the ultimate evil. V'hikai v'yerlo v'chari. He's going to kill everybody. What's wrong with this pasuk? Technically, what's wrong? That's true, but even before you get that, there's a problem with this pasuk.
It doesn't say who.
There's textual, what?
It doesn't say who in Maharu Lalechet, it doesn't say who did.
Well, what do you mean? Where? Which pasuk?
Okay, okay.
Maharu Lalechet means
run
to war?
No, Maharu Lalechet means hurry up, go! So what's the problem with the pasuk? How many times does he tell them to get moving? Right, although twice, obviously. Look at the pasuk. I'm going to read the pasuk now with emotion, the way it should be read correctly, I think. By Yomim David, the whole of the Davish, Tobin, Asher, Kuma, and Ibracha, Kiloti, Yalal, Pleita, Pleita, Mibne Shalom. Maharu Lalechet. Maharu Lalechet. Penny, Maher, Yassi, Gudu, Yabiyak, Arak. You can't call it your own. You feel the difference there? Look, I did this with my students. I said, if I tell you, open up your book, and then I say, please open up the book right place. And then I come back and I say, open up your book. I tell you right now, open up your book to the right place. What does that tell you about what that student did at the time? He didn't listen. He did not listen. That's why, again, with Navi, Navi's so beautiful. You have to look at it carefully. You feel the emotion. David told them to go. The only reason why David would have to tell them to go again is if they weren't moving. And then look at these terrible words that they tell him, which you see a lot when Shaul is trying to control the people and he can't. By Yom Rabbi Amelach, Kechol Asher Yukhara B'mi Amelach, Hinei Al-Adecha. whatever you command will do, which is always, if you learn from Paul, a negative thing. That was Shaul's biggest problem, that whenever he said to do something, they always said, b'chol asher you want, they will do. Which means the avadim were your classic bureaucrat politics. Not that they're evil. Don't get me wrong. The avadim aren't evil. But the avadim are thinking, listen, Absalom's the next in line. He is the next in line. Dove is a loser. Guy says, he's weak, he's got problems, he's got Bat Sheva. Who knows what kind of emotional problem? Look at this Bat Sheva chick. Instead of, he should have tossed her out, he admitted his sin and got rid of her. But look what he does. He goes and marries her and has another son, which he's treating with beauty and respect in a strange, very strange way. We got Absalom coming down the pipe. We got jobs here. Why don't we do the obvious? Take the guy who's the oldest, logically, right? Theoretically. Also take the guy who's clearly the strongest. The classic. These Avadim are your classic bureaucrat politicians. So, when David does obviously want Shlomo to be the king, and I'll be able to prove that later. The best way to suppress the boy is to suppress who? The father, true, but also what? What's that?
The mother,
right. By casting sin on the mother and by suppressing everything else about it, you essentially suppress Shlomo, which means they wanted who to be the king? They wanted Adoniyahu. How could I prove this to you? Adoniyahu throws a party, and look, who shows up at his party? You probably can guess, right? Call up David and show up the party. Let's take a look at that inside. It is in Pasuk, where are we? Okay, I'll start from Chet just so you can see. You know what, I'm actually going to read it. Oh, now look at Vav, by the way. Below. No, let's not do Bob. I want to do Bob a little later. Let's go to the party. Tzadoka, Kohen, Brayoka, Neim, Natana, Abiyu, Shunin, Giri, Lo, Karay, they call him. Vayizbach, Adon, Yahu, Zonu, Makam, Riyah, Zonu, Nasachel, Asher, Yitzah, Ayin, Vayitah, Kol, Achav, Nei, Anel, which means he has support from who? All of the brothers support him. Ubnai, Kol, Asher, Yudah, Vayah, Anel. So guess what party they show up to? What a surprise. What a surprise. They wanted Adon, Yahu, all along. You see how that works out really nicely? So you get there by paying very close attention to the actual tzukis, the actual, to the redundancy. By looking at the redundancy, by the things that look superfluous, by doing compare and contrast with other places, and da-da, all kinds of things, all kinds of germs come out of the woodworks of what happens. And that's exactly what we see. So now you know what we're fighting against. Dove is trying to fight back. He won't sleep with the Shunami. But he obviously is not strong enough to fight back. But before we see why he's not able to fight back, because Adoniyahu, we still have a problem. Let's turn the page. And we're up to C. Step one. Act C. Mother-in-law, the thug, the wife, the nubby, the master, and God. So the thug. Let's discuss the thug first. Now I got to finish the Rambam. I cheated, by the way. I apologize. I showed you only one halacha in the Rambam, halacha chet. I did not show you halacha chet. Let me read it to you, and then you'll see where the next 10 minutes are going to go to this year. Below ha-malchut gobad, not only does this fact that the oldest son gets the nod apply for malchut, which is the kingship, any kind of appointment of leadership should always go to the oldest son whenever possible. To the oldest son, period. Yerusha livno, v'ven v'no adolam. It always should pass down as a monarchy. V'hushe yeh, but this is when ha-ben mimalei makom avotav v'chachma uveyira. He has to have intelligence, knowledge, and I'll get into the whole concept of chachma when we talk about chachma shlomo in a week or two. And he also has fear of what? Yerat Hashem is what he's talking about. Hayam the Malay Behira. What if he had good fear of Hashem? He's good from Jew. Avotish Eil Malay Chacham. But he's, you know, a little. He's not the sharpest peg in the. What's it called? I'm not sure. Not the sharpest knife in the book. Nimanidimo told Makomachi, you appoint him as king. Well, Malakimo told you, do your best to make him a little sharper. If only She'im Bo Yerat Shemayim, someone who has no fear of God. Avotish Chachmato Merubah. Then the boy doesn't get established, which means you know where I'm going to go for the next 10 minutes. The only thing that would unestablish Adoniyahu from being the king is only one thing, right? He's a thug. Exactly right. So now shall we go prove that Adoniyahu is a thug? Because right now he looks like an okay, he's just a guy. He's a guy with a good claim. But let's go see if we can prove Adoniyahu is a thug. Let's see what he does. We're in Pasuk. Adoniyahu ben Chagiz, back in Balaamah. Mitnasei lemor. First of all, mitnasei lemor is a nasty word. Mitnasei means I raise myself on high. Already this hits on the bed. In fact, you know who used that word first? Mitnasei. Lama niseita ma'am Yisrael. Who is that who was talking to who? Do you know? It was Korach saying to Moshe, how dare you appoint yourself to a role that you do not deserve? Now Korach was wrong. But that's the sense of that word, yiseida, that the passive sense of the word yiseida is like taking something that doesn't belong to you. That's how Koach uses it, and it's the exact same format here. So the Navi is sparing no bones, but the Navi is going to lay it on thick with the trowel. Ani Amloch, I'll be the king. And by the way, why not? Ani Amloch is which tense? Future or past? There's nothing inherently wrong with that. I'll be the king, why not? I'm the oldest, I should be the king. Vayaslo Rechev Uparashim, he made for himself chariots and horsemen. Anybody remember who also set himself chariots, horses, and 50 people around before him? Oh, you know what? We're going to get to the problems with Shlomo Melchin Paro, and the problem with, we're going to get to the Egyptians. The problem that Israel always had with Egypt at the time is like America. Everybody wanted to be like them. That's ultimately the problem, that you establish governments to mimic what was going on. But actually, there's something much more evil going on here. 50 people running before him was none other than Absalom. I won't take you inside because I didn't print it. You go back to Shmuel Bed. When he first sets himself up, David allows him to come back after he kills Amnon. He lets him sit there for 3 years. He makes war with him. Finally, he's allowed to come back. And the first thing that he does is set up the people running after his chariot. Which means Adoniah was trying to remind David of whom? Absalom. Not only David, but the entire people. That's pretty thuggy, but let's continue on. In fact, the point is blessed too. So we already know he's the oldest son like Absalom. We already know that he's setting up a military idea like Absalom. But look at the next passage. Velo atzavo, it's a difficult passage. Velo atzavo aviv mi'amav le'mor. His father, meaning David, did not make him sad, saying, Madua kacha asita, why did you do, why are you doing like this? Vigam hu, which is talking about Adonyahu, tov toar ma'od. And of course, which guy is described as toar ma'od? Avshalom. Ve'oto yalda for Avshalom. And just in case Nathan, who's probably writing this, thinks that we just missed it, then he drives in a hammer. Ve'oto nada for Avshalom. So just in case you missed the comparison, essentially, Adonijah was probably walking up with a big sign that says, if you like Absalom, you're going to love Adonijah. Which is a terrible, terrible thing to do to your father. Think about the message that he sent to his father. That's pretty thuggish, isn't it? That'd be like, I don't know, if you had a kid and they started dressing up like Charles Manson. I mean, that's a thuggish thing to do. So already we get a sense of lack of Yerushalayim. Let's continue on to another year of lack of Yerushalayim. Yeah. But the interesting thing is, David, lo atzavo avivim yamav, but David cannot get it together. It's just how much you can do. You know, a little closer, come and tell him to stop. Okay, so maybe you'll be the king, but like, what is this? What is this Absalom nonsense? So David does not have the strength to do it. Let's see how we get the strength to do it. What's that? In some cases, David is very active. With Tamar, he was very passive. With Bathsheba, he's actually very active. Now, Bathsheba, he takes her in, he makes a statement, he has a kid, he mourns the kid while he's sick, he gets up after the kid is not sick. So sometimes David has better days and sometimes he has worse days, like most people. Sometimes, certainly here, between, what? I'm going to have to take your word for it. Don't scare me, okay? I got like 10 years to go. Okay, so already things are established, and let's look at the next big topic, the next establishment, which is in Zion. Vayud Barav, now Adonijah is going to put together a team. So the team is Yoav ben Tsruya, who's not a great guy. We'll talk about Yoav. He had his better moments and worse moments. The Eviatar HaKohen, so he's got now, Yoav represents the what? The army. And Eviatar represents the Kahuna, right? And that's it. But Yazuach Adonijah, who's missing? What's missing in this picture? And if you're curious about who's missing, what? Exactly right. Look at the next passage, just in case you missed it. So not the right to the next passage, but Tzadok HaKohen, so there's your Kohen on Shlomo's side, Ubnayahu Ben Yoyada, who was the head of the Kreti and the Pleti, which were the simple child, they were the military police, they were the secret service. Natan HaNavi. There's your missing guy. So where's God in the picture? Okay, you have a Kohen to do sacrifices. What's the good of doing sacrifices without a Navi? We spoke about the concept that you always need both sides of the Yinyan, of the Nebuah and of the Kuna. So once again, we're hinted at something that's foul. Not only that, there's another problem in the party itself, which is Pasuk Tet. Vayizbach Adonijahu Tzona Bakar. What's the problem with that statement? Vayizbach Adonijahu Tzona Bakar. Where's it going? Now, there's a Heter Bumble. So theoretically, anybody could do Kuna. Nonetheless, the Kohen is there. We know the Kohen is there. So why is the Kohen involved? Not a great question, because sometimes they say the king did it when it wasn't really the king. Nonetheless, there is an indication of something going on. So, now essentially what we have is we've established the thuggishness, and we'll establish it a little more. The wife comes down, nothing comes to Bathsheba. He says like this, and I have to do a little bit of outside. You know what? I must do it inside, because if you don't see the incident, the beauty of the incident is just incredible, so I must show you. Nothing comes over, and he knows things are in trouble. He comes over in Pasuk, Hayom Natan Obashava, Aim Shlomo, right? Make a point to him. Leymor, Halo Shamata, did you not hear? Or Shamata really do not understand. Kimalach Adoniyahu, because he's already taken the kingship, which means this party is not just a party. This party is a party. This party is a coronation party. Va'adonenu David lo yada. Now, if we simply read Adonenu David lo yada, which means our master David does not know, the assumption he doesn't know about what?
The coronation party.
They took the throne. That's correct. The only problem is, and I brought maps, but I think, I'm afraid I didn't bring it to you, so instead of passing it out, because that'll take too long, let's see if I have them here.
The map.
Oh, there is a map. Last page? Good. Good, good, good. So here are the two spaces that we need to know very well on the map. If you turn it this way, with Gabe Ben Hinnom south, then north is to the top. Many of you will recognize this. The square line is Yerushalayim, the wall to our days. If you look right here, that's Shar Yaakov. Shar Yaakov. Ir David is up here. Ir David is here, which is above the Shiloh. Anybody ever walk through the Shiloh tunnel? So you know that's closer to the Arab side. It's actually, they call that the David's Tower, but that wasn't actually where David lived. David was on the other side, much closer to Har Abayah. Now look at the two places where you get involved. Adoniyahu throws his party down in Enlil Gael. And again, if you've been in Yerushalayim, that's not too far. If you're standing right on, like, at Yaffa Gate, or even better, you can look down the road, because it's straight downhill, and essentially see that big amphitheater where they do music, and then there's the Gabe Ben Hinnom area. You can see out the window, we're talking here, I don't know how many yards we're talking, 400 yards, let's see. From David's house to there is 400 yards, that's four football fields. He's having a party. He's slaughtering animals. There's a party and everybody's there. So the problem with that lo yada is likely as David does know. Oh, so you can say David was sick and couldn't get off the seat. Okay, somebody would have told him. And obviously, people in here, David, know that there's a party going on down below. So if we say that David know about the party, then again, there's another possibility, which is also problematic, but it's the better possibility, which is what does he know? Take a look at the pasuk again. Ki malach Adoniyahu ben Karmel Chagid, va'adonenu David lo yada, which means he doesn't know what? That it's a coronation party as opposed to just like you're having a fun time down in the hotel. It's possible, but I'll just prove it later. I'll see that Lo Yodah will appear itself again. You'll see something that's actually much more powerful. Va'ata now, Rabbi Yasef Naitza, let me give you advice. Malti et nashef et nefesh b'nef shalmo. And the word malit means to survive. And your soul and your son's soul will survive. Now the simple pshat of this pasuk means that if Adoniyahu becomes the king, what's going to happen with you and your son? That's a simple pshat. Rashi rejects it, although Radat says it means death. Rashi rejects it for the reason that Rashi often rejects these things, because Rashi always tries to paint people as with as much sikkut as possible. Always tries to say, because he always finds, to him, again, it's the famous machlokes in Rashi and Ramban. Rashi does not, Rashi explains, for instance, the case of Yitzchak, loving Esau, so he comes up with all kinds of reasons why it's right for him to love him. And Ramban is more like a humanist. Ramban is, he loved it because he brought him food, and then a father loves his son, even if the son is a little bit of a father. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Ramban is always a little more practical. Rashi always tries to assume the best about people, which is certainly an admirable thing. I'm not saying that it's not worthwhile, Rashi said it. Nonetheless, other Mephoshim take the simple shot, which is that if I don't, and obviously for us, knowing politics and Machiavellian and things the way we do, if Adoniyahu does become king, then the likelihood is 60. Not only that, Shlomo is specifically, not only all the other brothers at the party, the only one who has not been invited to the party, specifically Shlomo, has been excluded. That's not a happy message to get if you get Shlomo, you know? If you're invited to the party, then Adoniyahu might be saying, listen, Shlomo, I know everybody thinks you should be king, but I'm the oldest, I love you like a brother, or maybe a little less, but come to my party and help me out here. But the fact that he's excluded from the party tells you that something not so good is going on. So then what he says, L'chi u'boyah narach, amarta elah. Now here you have to read the pasuk carefully. Halo ata adoni hamelah, is it so, you the king, yishmata la'amakta le'mor, you promised me, saying, yishlomo b'nech yinvolcha acharai, v'hu yeshev, al kisi madua malach adoniyav. You promised to me that he would be that he would be the king. So now here's the first time that we're actually hearing that there was a promise at all. And how come Adoniyahu becomes the kingship? Now she goes to tell him about the party, probably because she wants him to go to fully aware that there's no Yerek Shemayim. Now take a look, skip down a little bit, We'll actually go to where she shows up. She shows up in Pasuk Yud Zayin. But actually she shows up in Tekra. Batavo Batsheva Melech Achadra. First of all, do we know that Avishag is already Misharet HaMelech? We've heard it before, so why again? So I'll tell you cool measures in a little bit. What? It's something like that, but it gets even better. The Tikkun Bat Sheva Pishtapu Lamelech, Vayomar Melech Malach. Where have we seen those words, by the way? Malach. Right. So Esther, who wrote it, said that what she went through when she was putting her life on the line, well, she's actually, what's nice is when you see that one writer of the Tanakh is being a mafarish for another writer of the Tanakh, so you see that Esther actually, obviously Esther knows nothing, so she's saying, I want you to know something about Bat Sheva. What she was going through was equally dangerous and equally putting her life on the line, because like, Tony Allen hears about it, or for whatever reason. What she's saying is, you should know, it's a beautiful thing to see, that Esther said, you should know that my great-great ancestress, Bat Sheva, was as, well, actually, she didn't give me a name, but not important. But my great-great ancestors was putting her life on the line. I always like when, instead of having, like, Rashi being part, when you have, like, another Tanakh figure being part. All right, so let's continue on. And now she changes the story. Look at this. Vatomer lo Adoni, atadish bada, look what word she puts in. But I'm going to read it out. I hope nobody minds. I like reading Shem Hashem to get emphasis when it's appropriate. So let me read the whole passage. Vatomer lo Adoni, atadish bada, badonai alohecha. Nothing is told her. You should remind her that he made a promise to you. Bathsheba is changing that from just a promise to what?
An oath,
but more an oath based in what? It's correctly right. Which says that the relation, and she can't be lying. There's no way she'd be lying. That would say, I never said such a thing. So she's telling the truth. David didn't just say, I swear to you I'm going to take care of your kid. I swear to you. David said, I swear to God. Which not only redefines the power of the oath, but also redefines the relationship, in my opinion, between Bathsheba and David. And that goes back, remember I told you that he was monopolizing her, and he brought her in, and he loved her? Because that's the way it really was. But David's sitting there looking 40, 50 years later, and a lot's gone on, and he's lost his sons, and his life is miserable. I mean, there's a medrash that says that David filled up a cup of a chalice with his tears every day. And he's looking back at his life, and maybe it's not so clear. Did Bathsheba start off in sin? Yes. Did David do a pure tshuva? The answer is yes, although he still has to do a kapara. He nearly lost his life as a kapara. And then he takes in Bathsheba as his true wife. But you got to wonder whether he'd be looking back at that going, you know, maybe I should have messed around with her. And maybe he should have. And if he did, if he had gone out of battle, he would not have found Bathsheba. Then we'd have a philosophical argument. Maybe Uriah would have died on his own. David would have met her at a single bar, whatever it is, and they would have fallen in love. I like to think the answer is yes. I believe in the Shev. Nonetheless, David's got to be wondering, if I hadn't, I mean, okay, I love Shlomo and I love her, but if I had not done A, I wouldn't have gotten to B, so maybe B is as bad as an A. It's a good, I mean, it's a reasonable and very real philosophical argument that people have to deal with on an everyday basis. And that's what they're trying to remind him of. You did A, so B is bad. And she comes and says, you forget all relationships on Sheva. That was our relationship. That's how you felt about it at the time. Let me remind you how you felt about it at the time. But there's something else that's going on. The next message is this. Va'ata, look at your credit. It's a beautiful puzzle. You have to really use the poetry. Va'ata, hine adoni malach. Adoniyahu malach. Adoniyahu has become a king. Va'ata, adoni amelech. And now the king, you don't know. So it looks like you read directly, it looks like you read it like this. Vatayne Adonir Malach, you have to know. What you didn't know is that he's taking over the water, which is what we said before. Vatayne Adonir Malach, and now the king, please, you just didn't know, you need to know. Except the Pasuk doesn't read that way at all. Take a look at the beautiful parallel of the Pasuk. Go back to the page before the map, and you'll see step 1c, and look how it reads. Vatayne matches up to the word Vatayne. Adoniyahu matches up to the word Adoni, which is referring to David. And Malach, as in he became the king, matches up to you are Hamelech. You see that? Which means, look at what she's saying. Vata Adon, now let me read to you the way I think it's supposed to be. Vata Adoniyahu Malach. Vata Adoniyam Melech. And if you look through those two words, she's talking about, she repeats the word, because the Milat Mancha, the word that repeats over and over, is Adoni, Adoni. She pulls in the face, Adoni, Adoni. Because she's trying to remind him that who's the boss? He's the boss. And look at these words. Do you see how that reads? Now? So now, lo yida'a means what? Ata, adoni amelech, he's the king. Ata, ata, now adoni amelech, you're the king. Halo yada'ata, didn't you know? And now the question for you, what didn't you know mean? Didn't you know what? What's that?
If you were being used.
I would go with this. That you're the man. I think that if you just read the pasuk the way I think it's supposed to read, Lo Yatata has to refer to not the first part of the pasuk, which is Adoni has become the king, but to the second part of the pasuk, which is you are the king. Now, if you just read the second part of the pasuk, it's just an introduction. Doesn't my master the king know what happened? But that's not what it reads. If you look at the parallels of the pasuk, it says, aren't you my master? And didn't you know that? And now go back to Nutum's words. Back in, what was that pasuk? Where Nutum was first giving her the command. And now you can see the pasuk reads completely different. Yud-Gimel? Yud-Aleph. Yeah. Now read it this way. Vayomer Natana Batsheva Va'im Shomer Lamar. The next pasuk. Yud-Gimel. V'chi bo'i al-melech David v'amarta alav halo ata adoni ha-melech. Stop. And Mishbata la'amakha, etc., etc., etc. Which means Natan is telling us, read the pasuk that way. I think it's the right way to read the pasuk, based on the fact that we have a pasuk later, which is more obvious. She's taking two messages, three messages. One, Adonai was a thug, but she tries to party. Two is, you're the king, which means you need to make decisions. It's not enough that you simply don't sleep with the Shunamites. You need to make decisions about what we are. And what are we? I'll tell you what we are. We are a Maisa Kedusha. And our son is a product of that mindset. Natan, we're running out of time. You think how can you teach this over 5 weeks? Natan gives a different message, which is very interesting. You also have to read very carefully. I'll do it quickly instead of reading it. I'll just say what it is. When Natan shows up, he says, "Vatazumi amela enikoi shalefa lahilam miyashev al kisei," etc., etc. Vayak Kishav Adoni Amelach Himalata Vayitav Ani Ubikavasa. This is still about seven. Where is Natan? Vayomer Tanah Adoni Amelach. By the way, Esther comes in again. If you take a look at Kaf Gimel, Kaf Bet, it says, Hine Odena Midaberet Himalach. If you recognize those words from Esther, once again, Esther is making a very clear statement that you can't mix Tesh and Tesh. But that's a shear more on Esther than it's a shear on this one. So now let's get to Natan. Vayomer Natan Adoni Amelach. Ata Amarta Adoniyahu Yimocha Chalai. Vuhu Yeshev Al Kisei. You see, did you say, now you could read this as a straight question, did you say that Adonai should be the king? Which means, I didn't need a Jewish command, why don't you tell us if this is what you really mean? And then he describes the party again, and then look at Yuchat Vav, I was not invited, and then Chav Zayin, if it's true that the king has said this, why did you tell me, your servant, who was supposed to be the king? So you might say that this is just, nothing wants to be in the loop. That's not what's going on here. Read it like this. The Li Lo Hodata? How dare you not tell me who's in the loop? You need to understand something about nothing. David actually had five prophets. He had Eitan, Yedotan, and Haman, who wrote his Psalms. You know? He had God. Remember God from the end of the story? By Yomar David, God saw Li Mo, and tomorrow he had God. And God, he had nothing. Why doesn't he need two prophets? Well, explain to you why. Nothing only shows up one time. Everything that's personal, any personal sin that David does, him, people, always God. Natan shows up, if you remember, when it comes to success. He wants to go to the Mikdash, and Natan says, not you're going to be the Mikdash, he's going to be the Mikdash. Your son will be the king. And then Natan shows up to tell David that he's essentially out. Natan would have said, you're totally out, and not David done Shuba. Natan showed up to lead the riot after David, to tell him the story about this poor man who steals from the rich man, and had David not done Shuba, David would have been victory. Natan shows up specifically for events of inheritance, of succession. And now you can put from Shmuel Bet. So when Natan picks up the baby, this Natan only shows up for succession, and he picks up the baby, he loves the baby, he calls him Yedidya, now you know what he means, right? Now it's clear. Natan picks up the baby and says, this is the one that's loved by God. If you know that Natan only shows up, and God is usually the main player, Natan only shows up on issues of succession, which is true, then you see a different picture. So Natan is giving him another message beyond what Bachelet is. Who do you think you are? I'm the Navi Rashi. Hello, Yadata. Read the pasuk now. It's sarcastic. It's a rhetorical question. What pasuk was it? Both sukkim were. But it was, Imei 8, look at Chazayin. Imei 8, Adonai HaMelech Miach Dabar Kazeh, you're saying it comes for the king? Velo Hodata Davdachami Yoshev? Not Hodata, you didn't tell me. You didn't watch. You didn't confirm with me who's going to be the king. You didn't confirm the action. So now everybody's in the picture. We got the love picture. She's delivered the message to David. David's got the message from the prophet to say, listen, he made the king, and that made you specialized. But don't forget on whose word we appoint the king. Whose word? God's word. And God's word always comes through the prophet. That's why every king always has a prophet. except unfortunately for one thing. There was only one king who did not really have it. All major kings, Ahab had Eliyahu, all major kings had prophets, except for one king that did not really need a prophet, and that was and it'll come to haunt it. I'm sorry, I'm feeding into like a future in that. But you'll see, it comes to haunt it. But Nathan's giving a message. So then Duncan wakes up. And he wakes up out of his stupor. And then he says something very interesting. And I'll finish off with this. Look at this very strange lashon, which is, I actually wrote it down here, but it's pasuk, when he gets up, he goes, chafet. This is pasuk chafet. Now it ends here. Vayanana, he wakes up from his stupor. He says, okay, I'm taking control. You're right. Shlomo is a pure kid, and you're a pure wife, and everything is going to go the way we planned it. None of this Adonyahu nonsense, and none of this passive stuff, and none of this making me cold. And by the way, it can't be a physical illness. If you're wondering whether it could be cold or physical illness, obviously it's not, because he jumps off his seat, and we'll see later on that he helps Shlomo build Beit HaMikdash. We'll see. They rule together for about 2 years. Most people don't know that. They had simultaneous rule for about 2 years, and David did all the blueprints and started the original acquisition of cash, and then passed it over to Shlomo. It's interesting, we'll get to it when we talk about the Beit HaMikdash. So he says, Vayan and Al Tavi, Vayomer, Kiruli Batsheva, call me Batsheva. Right, first problem. Batsheva is already in the room, right? Now, here's the weird thing. Wait, where was I? What's your question? She comes before the Melech, Vatavol Lefnei HaMelech. Another redundancy. Now, maybe you could say she bowed down, but why does it say that? It doesn't say Vatavol Vatichra. It says Vatavol Lefnei HaMelech, Vatavol HaMelech. So the simple shot, of course. Then they say, what? That's one possible. The other thing is that David may try to make a deal that, right? Everybody, like, it's like I want you to stand before me. So even though you're in the room, I say call her so that it becomes a public introduction. So things, you know, everybody knows what's going on. Simple shot. Another simple shot. Why say batavo, tamod? What was she doing on the ground? Because that's what you do, and then you stand up, even though it's not written down. So the doc brings an interesting message, which he said is off the wall. He says rachoku. He says what he did was he brought Bathsheba. Remember, who's in the room? Who we already knew was in the room and was redundant. Abishag Ashurami. He's supposed to remind him of all his sins. Bathsheba and Tamar the other. The message goes like this. Beautiful measures. I never teach it to my 8th graders, but I always teach it to my 11th, 12th graders. What she did was he brought Bathsheba over, he had sex with her, right in front of the Shunamit, right there on the floor in front of everybody, and then after, that's why it says Batavo, like my Yavo Alilel, came to her, Batamo, and after she had sex, she gets up. Radak discards him, Radak is Rachok, measures Rachok, that's what Radak said. One of those, it's the most beautiful measures in the entire world, and it's so right. Because you know what it means? It doesn't mean that it really happened, it means by David, with the Shunamit standing there. Not exactly as a spy, but I think she knew what the role was. So I think she was involved. I think she was no idiot. And people from Shunamit are always very smart, right? We'll meet women later on by Eliyahu's time. Shunamit is famous for its very powerful, very smart woman. So the Shunamit is beautiful, powerful. I'm sure she knew what was going on. So spy exactly, more of a co-conspirator. So she's standing there, and her job is to remind David of why he should not be focusing on Bathsheba. He comes over, he has sex with Bathsheba, and they stand up in court with those examples. What it means is philosophically, by falling in quarter, and at the same point, discarding the relationship that was represented by the Shunamit. That's what it means to know the Shunamit's in the room. Because it's not important that David lo yida'a, which is a passive rejection. We want to know an active rejection. He sleeps with Bathsheba right there on the floor. The metric is astounding. Again, if you read metric shots, the Radak is right, the code. If you understand what's going on behind the metric, you see the beauty in it. And now you know why the Shunamit's there. One more item, which was on the list, and it only took a minute to say, which is the place where they had the party. David was a smart guy, and he said, where to have the party? Have the party on the Gihon. So if you take a look at the map, just kind of interesting to show you how smart David was. Please notice Ein Rogel, and then notice the Gihon. So Ein Rogel is all the way at the bottom, 400 meters outside of Yir David. And where is the Gihon? Also a river, but where is the river? Right by here, David, exactly right. And that's why things, essentially, these are a very, very strategic thing. What David says is, well, we need a party, we need a counterparty, bring the Nevi. And then you see, he brings the Nevi, he brings the whole thing, he rides him on the horse, and etc. He rides him on the donkey, etc. He makes all this show of Mufa. But the most important thing is, they've got an altar. David's not Nevi. We've seen Absalom before. And Adonijah was Absalom number two. He's got a party going on down there. So what he does is he throws a party here. If you take a look at the Sukkot. What it says is, Vayikra l'chol ha'am yichri ha'melech. What's interesting is, what you notice is the Abadim came to the party. But the worst part of that is when you say, l'chol adei Yehuda ha'melech. Did you notice that? Which means the party, here's the opening of the by Adonijah. Who did he invite to the party? Just who? Let's do that. After Doug has spent all the time combining the kinship, I told Yahoo that Doug is ready to break it apart because he feels more powerful. But when the party happens with Doug, they make sure to invite all Israel. And that contract between Shlomo and Doug is set. We know why Shlomo should be the king, both because the promise, both to the Kedusha of who he was and Bathsheba was. And tomorrow we'll see, next week we'll delve into who he kills. And in Yiras Hashem, we'll also get to the splitting of the debate. Maybe I'll skip over who he kills, which is important, but we'll run out of time, so maybe we'll get right into Chokhmat Shlomo and what it was with the splitting of the baby and whether it was a smart thing or a bad thing to do. And have a good night. I'm sorry I went over.
Hi, Sarah, how are you?
Oh, Jack.